Okay, when you really think about it, like the absolute bedrock of reality,
Right.
what everything around you is made of, you pretty quickly land on the quark, right? It's the basic building block.
It is, yeah. And
Well,
it feels so fundamental now, doesn't it? We almost take it for granted in modern science.
yeah.
But if you actually dive back, say, 60 years to when the idea first popped up,
Right.
you find this really amazing tension. The guy who proposed it, Murray Gell-Mann, he initially thought they were just theoretical constructs. He didn't actually believe they were real physical things you could ever find.
That is just fascinating, a perfect scientific paradox. So, welcome everyone to the deep dive. Today, we're cracking open a really foundational source text, M. Gell-Mann's 1964 paper. It's called A Schematic Model of Baryons and Mesons, and it was published in Physics Letters.
Exactly. And our mission really is to unpack this pivotal moment in physics history. We want to trace the journey of the quark idea, from being born as this necessary mathematical object, maybe, to eventually being confirmed undeniably as physical reality.
So, why did the inventor doubt his own idea? And I guess what finally forced the scientific world, kicking and screaming perhaps, to accept it?
Let's start with the idea itself. It was immediately world-shaking. Gell-Mann looked at the core of the atom, the protons and neutrons, and basically said, hang on, these aren't the end of the line.
Right, not fundamental.
Not fundamental. He suggested they were composites, made of even smaller bits he decided to call quarks.
Okay, quarks. Now, this is a huge conceptual leap. Just to give everyone listening some context, what kinds of particles was he actually trying to categorize here?
Good point. So the particles Gell-Mann was grappling with, they mostly fall into two big families. You've got the baryons, those are the heavyweights like protons and neutrons. They're
Yeah.
generally stable and, according to this model, made of three quarks
Three
each.
quarks. Okay.
Then you have the mesons. These are usually much less stable, very short-lived particles. And the model said these are made of one quark and one anti-quark pair.
Huh. So he wasn't just tinkering with the proton. He was essentially proposing this like universal blueprint for all the heavy, strongly interacting particles they knew about back then.
That's it exactly. And, the title of his paper, it gives us the first big clue about how he was thinking, a schematic model.
Schematic, like a diagram or a plan?
Precisely. It suggests a helpful design, maybe a chart, rather than,
Yep.
discovering a physical thing. The language is almost, well, tentative, hinting that this is just a really convenient way to organize the data they had.
That seems incredibly understated, doesn't it, given how massive the claim actually was. So why this hesitation? You said he treated them as mathematical objects. What mathematics did he need the quarks for?
Ah, okay. So what's really fascinating is that the quark idea wasn't out of the blue. It was actually the result of an earlier, equally brilliant mathematical insight he'd had.
Okay.
Gell-Mann had already developed this system for classifying particles. It's often called the eightfold way.
The eightfold way, I remember that. It was like an organizational chart, wasn't it? Kind of like a periodic table, but for all these strongly interacting particles, grouping them by their property.
Exactly like that. A periodic table for the particle zoo.
Yeah.
It showed that all these different baryons and mesons, they fell into these really neat symmetrical groups, usually groups of 8 or 10 particles.
Right.
But, and this is the key part, for that beautiful symmetry to work out mathematically, you had to assume there were three underlying fundamental building blocks, components that mixed together in different combinations to make the particles we saw.
Ah, okay. So the math, the structure of the eightfold way itself, it demanded that something like a proton had to be made of three smaller things. Otherwise, the whole elegant pattern would just fall apart.
You've nailed it. The quark wasn't something he observed first. It was a mathematical necessity to keep his beautiful classification system intact.
So the quarks, the up, down, and strange ones he proposed, they were basically like numbers in an equation first. The scaffolding he needed.
Pretty much, yeah. They were the scaffolding needed to build something else he was really interested in, something called current algebra. That was his main focus, actually.
Current algebra.
Yeah.
What exactly is that, and why was that more important to him than finding an actual new particle?
Well, current algebra is it's a quite sophisticated theoretical tool. It lets physicists calculate how particles interact, focusing especially on how things like electric charge and energy conserved quantities flow during those interactions.
Okay.
Gell-Mann needed a mathematical structure that followed very specific algebraic rules related to these conserved currents. And he realized if he just assumed these three fundamental particles, quarks, existed, then the current algebra worked out perfectly. beautifully, in fact.
Wow. So he basically reverse engineered the particle from the math he needed. He designed this amazing machine, but he seemed more captivated by the flawless blueprint than whether the actual hardware, the quarks themselves, existed.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah.
Now I can see why he might have been skeptical about them being real, you know, if they were just these placeholders his algebra required.
Absolutely. And you see this reflected in something else happening at almost the exact same time, completely independently. Georg Zweig, who was working over at CERN,
Why,
he
Grayson?
came up with the identical concept, the exact same idea, but he called his fundamental bits aces.
Quarks and aces. That's amazing. Two people, same idea. But I seem to remember reading that Zweig didn't have such an easy time getting his idea out there.
He definitely didn't, and that tells you a lot about how skeptical the physics community was at the time. Zweig wrote up his papers on aces, but they were initially rejected for publication.
Rejected. What?
Well, the reviewers, the journal editors, they were basically reflecting the general mood, this idea of particles inside protons, especially particles with these weird fractional electric charges, which is a key feature of quarks and aces. It just seemed too strange, too fanciful, maybe, to be real physics.
Wow, that detail really drives home the atmosphere back then. Okay, so you have two brilliant scientists landing on the same theoretical structure, but the establishment just can't quite accept the idea of the actual particle. So the shift from schematic model to physical reality must have needed some serious evidence.
Oh, it did. It had to be dramatic. You know, if the theory's own inventor sees them as just a calculation tool and the independent co-discoverer gets his papers turned down, yeah, the proof needed to be rock solid.
Right. So we're moving from the blackboard to the lab now.
We are, from concept to concrete evidence.
So how did physics make that leap from mathematical objects or schematics to, yep, these are real fundamental things? What were the experiments that absolutely nailed it down?
Well, quarks really earn their status as real particles because of basically a convergence of two massive experimental efforts. These started picking up steam in the late 1960s and really came through in the early 1970s.
Okay, lay the first one on us.
The first one, and maybe the easiest one to picture, came from experiments at the Stanford Linear Accelerator, SLAC. They were doing high-energy electron-proton scattering.
Scattering, so like firing things at protons.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Think about trying to figure out what's inside a box by shooting tiny pellets at it. If the box is empty or just filled with something soft, the pellets mostly glance off or pass through, right?
Sure.
But if there are small, hard things inside the box, sometimes a pellet will hit one dead on and bounce back hard at a weird angle.
Okay, I get the analogy.
So at SLAC, they fired extremely high-energy electrons. Those are the pellets of protons. And what they saw was remarkable. The electrons didn't just gently scatter off the proton as if it were one big, mushy blob.
No.
No. Instead, some electrons scattered at really wide, unexpected angles. Some practically recoiled, like they'd hit something incredibly small and hard inside the proton.
Ah, so that sharp recoil, that means the electron must have smacked into something tiny, dense, and point-like within the proton itself.
That was the only interpretation that really made sense of the data. The electrons weren't bouncing off the whole proton, they were hitting these hard, point-like internal bits. They initially called them partons.
Partons.
Yeah, just meaning parts of the proton. But it quickly became clear these partons were Gell-Mann's quarks. It was direct physical evidence. The proton wasn't fundamental. It had structure inside.
That feels pretty definitive right there. Hard experimental proof. Okay, but you said there were two crucial sets of experiments. What was the second one?
Right, the second big piece of the puzzle was the discovery of a new particle in 1974 called the psi particle, or Jepsine sometimes.
The psi particle. Okay, how did discovering another particle help confirm the quark model? Didn't Gell-Mann's original model just use the up, down, and strange quarks?
It did. His 1964 paper focused on those three. But even before the psi was found, there was growing theoretical buzz. Calculations suggesting that, to keep symmetries working in other areas of particle physics, a fourth type or flavor of quark probably had to exist.
A fourth quark, predicted theoretically.
Yeah, they even had a name for it, the charm quark. Then, in 74, two experimental groups simultaneously discovered this new particle, the psi-psi. It was very heavy, and it decayed very quickly, but its properties. They just didn't fit anything made of only up, down, or strange quarks.
So where did it fit?
The only way to explain the psi particle's properties was if it was made of this predicted charm quark, bound together with its own antiparticle, an anti-charm quark.
Wow. Okay, so the psi wasn't just finding another random particle. It was finding one whose existence basically proved that this fourth theoretically predicted quark, the charm quark, was real.
Exactly. It showed the quark model wasn't just a clever way to tidy up the known particles. It was a fundamental theory that could actually predict totally new kinds of matter. That combination.
Yeah.
The SLAC data showing quarks as real physical points inside protons and the psi particle confirming the model's predictive power for new quark flavors that really sealed the deal, that ambiguity just evaporated.
And that whole journey from 1964, when the quark was almost this mathematical ghost needed for current algebra, to the mid-1970s, when experiments showed it was a hard physical reality you could bounce electrons off of and predict new types of.
That's just one of the most incredible stories in modern physics, isn't it?
It really is. The schematic model worked brilliantly from the start because it organized everything so well, even if its inventor wasn't fully convinced it was physically real. But it was that sheer weight of experimental evidence proving both the presence of point-like things inside and the predictive power of the flavor idea that cemented the quark as, you know, the bedrock truth of matter.
Right. So just to wrap up the core insight for you listening,
The
quark started life almost as a mathematical trick, something Gell-Mann needed to make his current algebra theory work out elegantly. It was a concept so abstract, maybe, that another physicist, Zweig, got rejected for suggesting it might be physically real.
Yeah, initially. But the underlying power of that mathematical structure was so strong that when experiments, like the electron scattering at SLAC, found hard points inside the proton, and then the discovery of the psi particle proved the existence of predicted new quark flavors, well, that schematic model suddenly became undeniable physical law.
Exactly. And maybe here's a final thought for you to mull over a bit. If a theory can be mathematically essential, incredibly powerful, enough to revolutionize physics and organize everything known, even when the person who thought of it isn't sure it's literally real, how often does usefulness and consistency come before we truly grasp the physical reality in science? Kind of makes you wonder, doesn't it? What mathematical ideas or elegant structures do we rely on today that are maybe just waiting for that one critical experiment to reveal an unexpected, deeper reality we haven't quite grasped yet? Something to think about.